As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Look up. Look way up. He sits alone atop the standings. Bob McCown and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing, and it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? 'Cause when I get you alone.
It's interesting you play a Beatles song off the top of the program tonight. My wife, for her recent birthday, received as a gift a copy of a new biography of Paul McCartney, which, of course, has been hanging around the house. And so periodically I've been picking it up and reading it. And it is very interesting. It's by the same author that did the John Lennon biography recently. And I can't recall the author's name, but... Well, if you go into the bookstore, it's a big, thick book, and it's got Paul McCartney's picture on it. And it says Paul McCartney. And apparently, McCartney and his family were involved in the process. I think the author has some sort of history with the Beatles. He was around them in the 1960s when they began. And while I have not read it cover to cover, I must tell the truth. And probably have only read 50 pages of it and literally just leafing through and stopping and then reading a bunch of pages. It's very, very well done. And if you are at all interested in the Beatles, I highly recommend it. Greetings and salutations to y'all for this Friday, the 24th of June, 2016. I'm Bob McCown. The roundtable will come up in an hour from now with Jeff Blair, Michael Grange, and Arash Madani. But between now and then, your telephone calls are welcome on a topic only you can choose. I offer no suggestions whatsoever. Here are the telephone numbers you will have to dial. 416-870-0590 in Toronto. 1-888-666-0590. Toll free across the country and around the world. And if you got a cell, you can just punch in star 590. They're all toll free. You won't pay a nickel. Well, I was going to tell you something, but we're not announcing it till Monday. So you have to wait till then. Something about our signal that I can't explain. Because technology is way beyond me. What? Yeah, it's another thing you don't know about. It's a long list. We are kept in the dark on most things. Once other people decide things on our behalf, then they tell us that they've decided it. They do not any longer ask our opinion on anything. Apparently, we either accept the decision or hit the road toad. Which may yet happen. Alex in North York, you're first today. Hello.
Robert, we expect nothing but the truth from you always.
You can't handle the truth.
About with Damian Cox going to be joining you or something like this? Congratulations, I guess. Going to see
McCartney
and Hamilton, and he's got to be getting close to the end anyway. I think he's about 70, 75 years old.
He's in his 70s.
He always puts on a good show. The guy still got it, and God bless him. Speaking of Hamilton, I saw them and their backers last night at the BMO Field thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice. The tailgating was actually had a good time down there. A friend of mine, Stevie, has been tailgating down at the Dome for years and years, and it was nice. Actually, there was a crap load of people. There was some confusion with how people got in and out, but ultimately it was a good time. And unbelievable, they were only charging $4 for a beer. You go to any of the MLS and E establishments, it's at least $10 to $12. So they were pretty fair there. The game was a piece of junk, but you know what? The atmosphere was great, and had a good time, and just now looking forward to minus 40 in that northern wind, brother. Have a great weekend.
See ya. So here's what I know about the game last night. They sold 95% of the tickets, which on the surface is really good. But if you were in the Dome and sold 25,000 tickets, you'd say, eh, for a home opener, mediocre crowd. Here you are at a new park, renovated, natural grass, outdoor, you can tailgate. All the excuses are now gone, Argo fans. And it wasn't a sellout. And I'm not here to say that that is indicative of anything. But I'd be a little bit concerned. It's hard to imagine more people showing up for games 2, 3, and 4 than for game 1. And if you can't sell out a 25 or 26,000 with all of the frou-frou that I previously mentioned, I don't know. I wish them well. But many years ago, a then CFL commissioner called me and said he wanted to get together. And we sat down and he asked me what I would do to fix the situation with the Toronto Argonauts. And the truth, I honestly told him, I don't know. If you listen to this program, you know I got opinions on just about everything, but I do not know. I had a very good friend of mine who was the president of the Argonauts when, Brian Cooper, who's in here on a regular basis, he's our sports business guy, was president of the Argonauts when Candy McNaughton Gretzky owned the team. I saw what happened there. Two close friends, David Cinnamon and Howard Sokolowski, owned the Toronto Argonauts not so many years ago. I spent many games in a box with them, or more accurately with their families, because most of the time they were on the field. Well, at least Cinnamon was. You know, I was on the committee for the Grey Cup when they had it here in Toronto, 07, I think. And the answer is, I just don't know. I don't know what else to do. The BMO move, honestly, I'm still not at all sure that it's the be-all and end-all answer. I don't know that it answers all the questions. Certainly the way the team performed is not going to raise any level of optimism about future ticket sales, but I don't know how many season tickets they've got. I'm not trying to cast a negative aspersion here. I have long been a CFL fan, much less so the last few years, I confess. But I have some doubt about what this will turn into. And if this doesn't work, then what? We've been down this road before. Ted in Mississauga, you're on primetime. Hello.
Hey, Bob, afternoon. Quick observation, and I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard anyone talk about it, about Troy Tulowitzki. I noticed this just as he was starting to get a little bit better with the bat. He had actually switched brands of bat. And I had to kind of go back and look at a couple of other videos I'd had on my PVR to make sure I wasn't just seeing a different color. But I'm sorry, I don't have the different brands in the top of my head. But I just think it's strange with all the scrutiny that he's had about his batting that nobody's picked up on the fact
that I haven't seen that story. No, I haven't seen it either. I am a little surprised.
It's definitely a different manufacturer, but it could be he's changed his weight or the balance of the bat. But
I would suspect.
His finger corresponds,
yeah, I would suspect
his
so.
Hitting.
Yeah, I would suspect so. I know when Russ Martin reduced both the length and weight of his bat, it was much publicized. And I'm a little surprised that that hasn't been picked up on by the many, many media that follow the Blue Jays. But yeah, I thank you for the information, and we'll watch with interest. And we'll try and address that situation the first part of next week and see if we can get confirmation that he has indeed not only changed the kind of bat that he's using, but perhaps it's lighter or heavier or shorter or longer. Perhaps the handle is narrower or thicker. All these things are possible and all can be factors. Bob in Toronto, hello.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Sir.
It's a subject I know that has been discussed at some length recently, so I'm not going to take much time on it, and I'm sure you don't want to as well. But over the years, I've exchanged emails with Steve Sands of the Golf Channel on various topics to do with the game of golf. And we discuss, for example, the ruling where you ground the putter and the ball moves, that one that the RNA got rid of a few years ago. What we came down to in this last discussion is that there should not be a penalty levied against an individual, or at least, let's put it this way, a stroke charged or incurred by the individual unless he in some way strikes the ball. In other words, whether it's to do with the slope of the green, the wind, whether he's close to the ball or not, if they had a rule in place that simply left it that way, that there was no penalty incurred unless you strike the ball. What do you think about that?
I like that in principle. Here is the dilemma I face. Today I'm playing a very social game of golf. I was playing at Toronto Golf with a friend of mine and his brother-in-law, by the way. Not that that's relevant, but just to be accurate. And I hit it in some fescue that had been stepped down. So if you understand fescue, it's long, long grass. And it was lying on its side, and the ball was sitting on top of it. And I guess I wasn't paying that close of attention, and I started to put my club down behind the ball, and I touched the fescue. And, of course, because it was lying on its side, it caused the ball to move. Now, that movement was approximately a half a turn. Like, it didn't roll like a tremendous amount. And I think I can honestly say that it did not change my lie advantageously to me, nor disadvantageously, I must admit. It just kind of moved a little bit. And I immediately stopped, and I thought of DJ, and I looked around, and the other two guys were on the complete other side of the fairway, and I thought, well, you know, we didn't even play for money. Okay. It was a completely social game. So what am I going to do? I'm going to take a penalty shot on myself? And I went ahead and hit the ball. But it brought to mind the very issue. This is this morning, the very issue you're talking about. That if the lie is not improved, then why penalize somebody? It seems rather arbitrary to me. It doesn't seem to have a specific meaning in the game. The only caution I would give you is, where do you draw that line? And I don't know the answer to that.
Well, if I may, Bob, if we go back to the premise, and that is the idea of striking the ball. In fact, in what you did, you might have caused the ball to move, but you, in fact, didn't strike the ball. You didn't make an attempt to strike the ball before you saw it move. And I think, given what you've mentioned recently, and we all know as part of the game of golf, and that is the degree of integrity whereby we have seen golfers who haven't been spotted by the officials but call a penalty on themselves.
Oh, sure. I've done it myself.
Right.
I think we all have. I would like to think we all have.
Exactly. So I think on that basis, you've abided by the rules of golf as they are, and had you in some way hit the ball inadvertently or caused it to move by virtue of a strike of the ball, then you'd probably call a penalty on yourself.
Well, okay, so what if I had put my club behind the ball and then taken the club back to take a practice stroke? And you see a lot of players do this, where they don't formally address the ball, but put their club behind the ball and then swing inside the line in a practice stroke. Is that a penalty?
Then I think on that premise, you are we're back to the matter of integrity, and you, in fact, are not taking a swing at the ball. You're taking a practice swing, and you have to account for it in your conscience.
Well, okay, so let me ask you another question. Let me ask you another question then.
Right.
Should I be compelled to put the ball back where it was before it moved?
I think so. I think that's part of the game if, for example, you're on the green and the ball moves and it moves closer to the hole, I don't think there's any reason or justification for you having a shorter putt than you had before.
No, agreed.
So I think on that basis, I would say that as long as the ball is moved back to where it was, just as in the same way as a ball hitting another ball on the green. And
you replace the original ball.
You go back to the original spot for the
right.
First ball. Yeah.
Yeah. I thank you for the call. It's an interesting
You're welcome,
premise.
Sir.
Thanks a lot. Something to think about. I often do think that while I have tremendous respect for the integrity in the game of golf and for the rules that have been laid down over 400 years and adjusted accordingly over the years, I do think we live in an era right now where we are being too finite, if that is the right word, in interpreting the rules. Too diligent. Too specific. That really punishment should be levied by a willful act. I mean, let's go back to the DJ US Open. What was that course? The West Coast course where he played and was in that, he was in the bunker. They had all these waste bunkers and real bunkers, and he grounded his club thinking it was just a waste bunker and not an actual hazard. And was, it was a two-shot penalty. And the dilemma you get into, and this is where I have trouble with the last caller's position. While in principle I agree, where are you going to draw that line? I mean, let's be honest. I don't think there's a PGA Tour player out there that deliberately moves the ball. Okay, here's a rule. You hit it into an area where there is loose grass. You are entitled to move or remove the loose grass from around the ball under the proviso that the ball does not move. You can remove branches. You can remove any loose impediment, rock, anything. But the ball cannot move. All right, so you see a blade of grass, a blade of fescue, long grass. And you don't think it's touching the ball, and you take it away, but the ball moves. Now, technically, you have not really improved your lie, but is it a penalty? Under the rules of golf, it is, the current rules of golf. And this is the problem I get into. While I agree there are situations like the DJ thing, which I think was ridiculous. But the blanket abolition of those rules can also be extremely problematic. Yeah, it might have been Whistling Straits. Victor Milton, hello.
Hello, Bob. Happy Friday. You know, I was just thinking about the draft tonight with Austin Matthews and over the last 30, maybe 32 years, I'm just realizing that maybe only six or so number one overall pick have gone on to win Stanley Cups with the team that have drafted them. And you know, and that includes Mary Lemieux and, you know, Mike Bedano and a few others. I can name them, but you probably know who they are already. Now, my point is that most of those guys, except for maybe Vincent LeCavalier, had guys that could be their mentor that they could look up to. This guy is coming into, I mean, Morgan Riley, God bless him, but I don't believe they have, they need to go to free agency. They need to bring somebody established.
They'll have that guy on July the 1st.
Okay, thank you very much. That's what I wanted to ask, because I think that's a big concern if you bring this guy in and the weight of the Toronto Maple Leafs are on his back. So, and that guy, July the 1st, and my last question, who do you think it's going to be, Mr. Bob?
Well, we know.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks. We know who it is. It's going to be Stamkos. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind. And Stamkos will return to center, where I believe he prefers to play. And I would suspect the Leafs will have two very young rookie centers and a veteran center who has been a consistent, pretty consistent 40-goal scorer in the National Hockey League. And will play the role that you're looking for. And, you know, the one part of what you said that I don't put a lot of weight on is first overall draft choices that have won the Stanley Cup. Let us remember that in order to be the first draft choice, you are going to go to a club which presumably, barring a trade, was the previous year the worst team in all of the league. And that is a hole that is not easy to climb out of. And can take a prolonged period of time, ask Edmonton. Even with a whole bunch of number one draft choices. So the significance of that statement as it pertains to Mr. Matthews is not as relevant to me, let's say, as it is to you. Mike in Burlington, hello. Mike, are you there?
How you doing?
Hi, fine.
A couple things. I'll just keep the one thing brief because it's already been mentioned on your show earlier. The lack of sellout in the opener last night, Argos and Tiger Cats. I'm just going to say one thing. I mean, yeah, to me it is a concern. If it looked like a nice atmosphere, a nice facility, and, I mean, as a Ticat fan, I love the result. But barring that, I think the biggest loss was not selling it out, because the next home game, whoever it may be against, I mean, you had Ticat fans come down the QEW.
Yeah, you had transplanted
Hamiltonians who live within the GTA also show up, support their Cats. So now it's like, what happens if the next home game is against someone like Winnipeg, Calgary, who probably doesn't have much of a following, at least at this part of the country?
Let me ask you a question. Were you at the game?
No, I couldn't make it. But I have a potential solution, but I don't know what the Argos are charging for their tickets. But would maybe lowering ticket prices maybe enhance someone's desire to attend, or is it just?
I'll tell you the one thing I have never heard with regard to Argonaut tickets is that they are too expensive.
Okay, it was just a shot in the dark. I think everyone else is kind of exhausted with ideas. So I was.
I don't have any left.
I don't know what they're asking for at the door.
I heard you could get in for $20. I don't think that's excessive.
And then there's no issue with pricing. It was just, like I said, was just a shot, worth a shot.
Thanks.
Now, for someone in media like yourself,
you
hear tons of rumors. Doesn't matter what sport, what player. And right now, one of the hottest rumors circulating is about PK Subban. Now
Bergevin has denied that he's shopping.
He addressed that last night.
He says he's had a few calls, but only because the story got out there, and he said, I'd call too. But he said it would take. He's not shopping him.
I know.
And he says he It's not serious, and it would take a boatload of players in to get him to even consider it. So I don't pretend to know whether he's lying now or was told somebody a lie earlier or how the story got started.
What I would like to ask you, as someone in the media, how do a lot of these rumors get generated? Now we have Twitter. Now we have all these independent hockey bloggers. We have hockey columnists galore. Is it just starting from one simple tweet, or I heard somebody because my uncle's best friend is a Zamboni guy at the Bell Center? Like, I mean, what I'm trying
to say.
Well,
yeah, a lot of that happens, and a lot of it is outright lies. To be very honest, with you. And it's not; those are not generated usually by the media, but by fans. Mm-hmm. And if you have enough Twitter followers, and just throw something out, what happens is people retweet, and then even if somebody with 250 followers gets half of them to retweet, but one of them has 5,000 followers and they retweet, or some percentage of them, it becomes like a virus and it spreads.
Exactly.
And the minute it goes from the source, which could be completely and utterly unreliable, by the time it gets to the second generation, you no longer know where it started.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying
and
to
it
get.
Becomes,
root
it becomes,
cause, so to speak, because
fact.
This is the prime time for any hockey columnist, draft, free agency, guys with no trade clauses, et cetera. This is their prime time prior to the, obviously the trade deadline in early March. So, I mean, you would think some of the more credible guys out there, and there's a lot of them, would, mention simple rumors, but this one just keeps escalating. I don't know whether some people just don't like PK because of his perceived ego. I have a bias. I like the guy because I like the team. I think he has a lot of gusto and a lot of skill, but there's a lot of people that don't like him, and I think that's one of the reasons this rumor is being generated.
Maybe. Yeah, I can't speak to it because, as I said, I don't know. I thank you for the call. And, I like PK. I know PK. He's a terrifically nice young man. Grew up listening to this show, has been in this studio. We've broken bread together. He has been to my home. I like the kid a lot. My wife, who grew up in Montreal and who is a Canadiens fan, took her son to Montreal for a game, texted PK. He came down and met her and her son after the game, gave him an autographed sweater. I mean, he couldn't possibly be nicer. Now, here's what I will say about PK. To watch the guy play with the kind of bravado that he has, the energy that he exerts, the confidence that he has, the apparent ego, and I say apparent ego, that he demonstrates, to see that and then to meet him, these are two entirely different observations. Off the ice, at least, he is not the guy many people project him to be on the ice. And that is why, even when these rumors about Subban being traded came out, quite frankly, I dismissed them, not knowing whether they were true or not. But assuming that the Montreal Canadian ownership and management knows the PK Subban I got to know, understands that the way he performs on the ice is entirely different from the way he acts off it. And in my mind, that off-ice character is far more important in terms of making a determination as to whether you want to keep him or let him go. I mean, on top of all that, he's a pretty damn good hockey player. So, Bergevin's comments that were published today denying that he's shopping PK and even suggesting it is really unlikely that anybody could even offer him anything that he'd even consider are far more appropriate than the rumors that have been running around for the last few weeks. Jeff in Mississauga, hello.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
I'd just like to make further comment on the moronic ruling that the PGA made on that Dustin Johnson situation.
Yes, sir.
The only thing that he could possibly have done that would have caused the ball to move is during his practice swing, a piece of grass knocked it. I mean, that's absurd to even think of that. But
well, it was a delayed reaction, too, because if you watch the second practice swing, he took two practice swings. The second practice swing, he stopped, took his club, went to put it behind the ball. Before he grounded his club, the ball started to move.
Yeah.
It seems to me that the time frame, like I would have acknowledged your thought the ball had moved sooner, but it didn't.
No. But the ball, in my view, just settled into a little hole.
100% agree with you, and we see it every day on a golf course.
Of course, but more significantly, Bob, is up until 3 years ago, at least 3 years ago, until they made the rule changes, if you took a practice swing on the green and inadvertently hit the ball without ever having addressed it, you got to replace that ball, no penalty. Now, unless they've changed that rule should have applied in that situation, that his practice swing caused the ball to move. He gets to replace it. No penalty.
Yeah. I mean, again, I can't. It's an interesting thought. I thank you for the comment. I can't even for the life of me explain what was on the USGA's mind. I mean, we had the Canadian, the Golf Canada rules official on this program earlier this week. And I was pretty stern with him. But nothing personal. But it's just, it befuddles me. And it's not necessarily that I think the rule has to change, although I'm amenable to discussing that. But rather the interpretation of the rule at that point in time is just absurd. You know, DJ backed off, saw the ball move, backed off, looked at the rules official. Rules official came over. Rules official did what he is supposed to do. He asked DJ, did you cause the ball to move? DJ said, no. He went to Lee Westwood, his playing partner, and said, did you see DJ cause the ball to move? Lee Westwood said, absolutely not. The rules official said, fine. Play on. That rules official, that decision at that moment should have been final unless there is absolute video evidence to support a contrary decision. And as many times as we have watched both the regular speed and slow motion of that, I defy anybody to tell me that there is definitive evidence that DJ's actions had anything to do with the ball moving. It's impossible to say that. And then we get to part two, which was a schlamaz of waiting seven holes before you told them that you might have to give them a one-stroke penalty, which they ultimately did give them, and principally to save face. I mean, the United States Golf Association does not have, first of all, the experience. I understand they operate 7, 8, 10 events a year. But the United States Golf Association essentially is a bunch of amateur golfers. Well-meaning, but without the experience necessary to make those kinds of judgments. At least with the PGA Tour, the people that follow the tour, the people that administer the tour, do so on a week-in and week-out basis. They are out there 30, 40 weeks a year. I certainly trust their judgment above the United States Golf Association or, with due respect, the people at the Masters, or, with due respect, the RNA at the British Open. Because the RNA is in the same position as the USGA. It just seemed to me to be a, we want to inject ourselves into this story. And we can't help ourselves. I can't keep quiet. I can't shut up. I'm the president of the United States Bleepin' Golf Association, and nobody's paying attention to me, and damn it, I'm going to make this call. I mean, of all the rule things that I've seen, and you don't see them very often, you know, the double hits and the grounding your club in the in a waste bunker instead, you know, those are pretty straightforward. I get those. You know, compare that situation. We got a break, but compare that situation to the how many replay calls have we seen at second base in Major League Baseball this year? It's like every game. Okay, here we go. Let's look at the video. In your mind, in all honesty, have you seen a call overturned where the evidence was unclear? I don't remember one. And that should be the barometer by which you judge these things. If you're going to overturn the call, which is really what the United States Golf Association did, because that official on the fifth green made a decision, like an umpire at second base. Okay, you want to go to the video? All right, fine. We have video. You might as well use it. But unless that evidence is absolutely definitive, you got to go by what that official, the call that official made. And more than that, you have to respect the integrity of the player. I would like to believe, and I do believe, that DJ would have called a penalty on himself if he believed one was due. And I also believe Lee Westwood would have endorsed that position. Enough on that topic. 23 minutes before the hour, we'll take the break, then come back with more of your phone calls. It's prime time on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Minutes before the hour on primetime. I'm a Danny Grange and Blair on the roundtable coming up in a few minutes. Meanwhile, back to your phone calls. Meanwhile, Brad, Fort McMurray. How you doing?
How you doing today?
Good, you?
Not bad. I just want to get your opinion on LeBron James and in this matter. Before he won the championship this season and became MVP, there was all the questions about his legacy and everything else. And then the media went around and said, you know, the LeBron haters have to, you know, they're going to have to give him this kudos and all these things. Now, generally, I don't pinpoint a player or whatever and just dislike them or whatever. I think he's a great athlete, one that we haven't seen the likes of in the sport. But I finally figured out yesterday some of the reasons why. And the biggest one, I think, was when he first came into the league as a rookie, the same year Carmelo Anthony did, after Carmelo Anthony came in off of winning an NCAA title, he was already dubbed the best. Now, like, in that class. Now, if you look at the two that when they came in, Carmelo Anthony took Denver to the playoffs in a harder division, And LeBron James, the ball just went through him, and he was allowed, like Kobe, when he came out of high school, to make all these mistakes. And then I was thinking when he left and went to Miami, and then when he went back, and then he got Kevin Love and everything else. I just want to know, in your opinion, the three championships that he does have, because they manufactured these teams and got big three people, so Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and then Kyrie Irving, LeBron James.
Kyrie Irving was already there.
And, yeah, I know, but brought in Kevin Love, got rid of the trade for Andrew Wiggins, the draft, I mean.
Look, I know where you're going with I got to cut you off because this is getting really a long question, and I don't know whether it's ever going to stop. So, look, you're entitled to hate LeBron James. You're entitled to not respect LeBron James as a person. But to suggest that LeBron James is anything but the best basketball player out there right now is kind of crazy. He proved everything to me that he needed to. And that's all that really matters. Your personal opinion of him, has he made mistakes off the floor? When he opens his mouth, usually it's a mistake. There you go. Do I hate him for it? No, I just ignore him. I mean, he's an unbelievably good basketball player and quite frankly, a buffoon. I'm really only interested in what he can do on the basketball court. His social skills are really of no consequence to me. They don't impact me. Gary, Ajax, hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. McCowan.
Hi.
Mr. McCowan, I just wanted to get your opinion on Tim Leiweke. I think that as a sports fan in Toronto, what he did in the short time that he was here was just brilliant. I mean, he got Masai and then turned around and got Shannon. And ever since, I think we've got both teams are becoming respectable franchises.
Well, be careful with that. The Toronto Maple Leafs just finished dead last, and we'll have the first pick of the draft tonight. Respectable is not what the Toronto Maple Leafs are yet. Do I like the group that they put together at the top? I do, but I've said that before, and it's failed. So I'll reserve my judgment on the success of that franchise. He also made changes to the soccer team, and I would say that the impact there has been negligible.
I think, though, I mean, as far as, like, he basically gave these guys the empowerment to Shannon to now go hire Bob, what's his name, the coach, you know, paying him so much money. And also, I just think that it was just the new guy. Actually, the reason I called is I didn't know who took over from him. But I think that it's just that he had a vision and he got the job done.
Look, so, I thank you for the call. I got along fine with Tim Leiweke. I think Tim Leiweke did some really good things. But in truth, I'm almost reluctant to say this because I can't say it in any way, but to make it sound derogatory, and I don't really mean it to be, but what did Tim Leiweke do? He spent somebody else's money. It wasn't his money. He took MLSE's money and spent it to go and get high-priced, high-profile people. Are they the smartest people? We'll find out. But there is no evidence yet that the Toronto Maple Leafs or TFC are heading down the right road. We hope so. But it's a little premature to pat Mr. Leiweke on the back and invite him to return for the parade that he missed. I know he knows what the route will be because I think he planned it. He just didn't stay long enough to see it. Medani, Grange, Blair, Roundtable coming up next. Hope you stick around. It's primetime.